And it helped me to understand fully that in order for me to achieve my goals, I don't need to do more, I need to do less. I need to do less of the piddly, tiddly, winky kind of stuff. That's a technical term. And do more of the big lever moving moves.
Hello and welcome to this podcast with me, Nikki Hutchison, that's going to take you from overlooked to fully booked. Today is a guest episode, and today's guest, Tammy Thomas, is a keynote speaker, strategist, and author who I have known of for some time now, but never chatted to like this. And unless I'm much mistaken, I don't think we've met yet either. Is that right, Tammy?
Absolutely. How bizarre.
How bizarre. It's actually really unusual for me to invite people onto the podcast, full stop. And particularly if we haven't met in person. Mm-hmm. But the reason I'm so keen to speak to Tammy today is that you're going to be speaking at Adventures in Marketing, which is happening in Edinburgh on the 5th of February. I'll share more details of that at the end. But for now, Tammy, welcome and let's get to know each other.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I feel very excited and honoured to be here.
Awesome. So I would love just to start with you sharing a little about the work that you do. I want to ask you, first of all, about becoming a keynote speaker. When did you decide that you were going to turn this into a revenue stream and how did you go about it?
I decided properly decided I was going to turn it into a revenue stream in 2024.
Okay.
Let me tell you the truth.
Okay.
I started my business wanting to be a keynote speaker, but I didn't think I had everything I needed in order to be a keynote speaker. But clearly, I was supposed to be doing that because I've been keynote speaking even before I had this business, and I was invited to speak during having this business, but always treated it like a fluke. And I had internalized the message that I needed to have a book first, I needed to have a master's, I needed to have all of these things to justify me putting myself out there as a speaker. Had I known then what I know now, I just would have started doing the speaking as a real, tangible, delicious revenue stream when I started my business back in 2018.
So instead, you went off and ticked all those boxes until you felt confident enough to do it.
Yeah, but not the master's yet. The master's is this year.
Okay.
Do you know what, Nikki? It was confidence in a weird way. You give me a microphone, I'm up and down that stage talking my stuff. I was diagnosed with ADHD in 2023. I am 48. So I've had the vast majority of my life undiagnosed.
Yeah.
I went to school in the 80s and 90s. Nobody understood what was going on with me. I was one of these people that had great potential. I just wasn't living up to it. So I internalized the message, but I had to have particular things in place in order to justify my existence, basically. So there was a lot of old narratives suppressing who I'm supposed to be, but who you're supposed to be is so strong, it peeps out anyway. And I just thought, okay, no more peeping. It's just got to be there.
I wasn't planning to ask you this, but it fascinates me because I know a lot of people in your situation. And I suspect that was I to try and pursue a diagnosis, I would also be diagnosed. I've heard that it can really, really throw you for a while because you feel that there are things that you've missed out on or like some of the things that you've just described there. Was that your experience?
I absolutely did have grief for not understanding myself. I didn't feel like I missed out per se, but I felt like there were so many ways I made myself bad or not good enough that I could have avoided completely had I had this diagnosis. I also believe that I've got a huge thing about qualifications. I only left school with two GCSE passes because I just could not get what was in my brain onto paper. I would have done so much better academically if I had the support around me. But at the same time, goodness knows what kind of stuffy corporate job I would be doing if I had all of those things in place. More than anything, when I got my diagnosis, I had a huge sense of relief. I recognized that all of my quirks were supreme intelligence. It was my body's way of saying, this is the way you're supposed to do things. Stop following the tried and tested, proven way of doing things. And it just gave me the permission I need to be who I am and do things in the way I do them. Because it's not that I don't get things done.
Yeah.
I just don't do it the way they say I should. And now I've been able to push they to the background. They come forward every once in a while and I remind myself, no, that's not your path. So those chatty voices from the past can just dissolve.
I love that. Thank you. Okay, so back to speaking.
Yes.
And this is a hot topic amongst many people in the entrepreneurial space just now. I often pay to speak at events. I am also paid as a speaker. And sometimes I speak for free. Is this still the case for you?
I've never paid to speak at an event, and I never will, because you're going to have such a stonking great good time. I'm not paying for that. This is what I do for work. I do, on occasion, speak for free, depending on what it is and if I have met my own financial thresholds. So if it's something to do with social work, something to do with young people all day long, if it is a charitable organization, that's a small charity, Oxfam and all of those, they've got the money. But if somebody I know has decided they want to set up a charity to support this, whatever it is, that's my way of investing in them. And quite often, those small charities will say, we don't have much money, we can give you X amount. And I'll say, please take that as my donation. And for, let's say, emerging women-owned brands, I'm happy to work within their budget. If you're a woman-owned brand who is prancing around the internet talking about making 100K a month, you're paying me what I need to be paid.
Yeah.
Like, we're not doing any exploitation.
Absolutely fair. Okay, great. So the reason that I sometimes pay to speak at events, and don't get me wrong, my opinions have changed over the years. There was a time where I absolutely would not have considered it, and I would have kind of, frankly, looked down on it. And I could have paid to headline at least 5 events so far this year with the things that have been sent to me.
Wow.
Because I feel like there's such an explosion in speaker sponsor opportunities now. But if you know that somebody has created an event, and like, each to their own here, I don't think there's any right or wrong. We're all just doing business at navigating things the way that we feel we need to. But if you know that somebody has set up an event and it's going to be a room absolutely full of your ideal clients, and that you have got something that you know those people are going to need, that you're going to be able to sell after your slot, is that still a no for you to pay?
It is for me, sponsor, speaker, whatever it was you just said. I really like the sound of that. And if we're being clear and transparent, and part of my sponsorship of your event is that I get to speak, that puts a whole different complexion on things. But for me, speaking is my zone of genius work. When I was a child, I liked performing arts and all of that. I always wanted to be quote unquote famous, but I didn't want to be an actress. I didn't know what it was, but I knew I wanted to stand on stage talking to people. I didn't know what keynote speaking was. So for me, it feels like this is my gift. I'm not going to use it in that way. However, I don't know, if there was a brand that was really speaking to my values. So one of my core things is I am passionate. I am on a mission to support underrepresented people with high potential to become thought leaders. Now, if there was something to do with that, something aligned with that, like I love what we will commonly refer to like an underdog. If it's something to do with that, then I would be open to that. But no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. That makes sense.
Yes.
I love it.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about your brand, because during my research, I've obviously been looking at the things that you do, the things that you put out into the world, and Live360 is the name of your brand. I would love to know where that comes from and what it means for you.
Yeah. So when I started my business, that was a result of burnout. I was a local authority social worker for nearly 16 years. The last 2 years, I had my own social work practice. I always wanted to have my own business. I assumed I would have a social work business, but burnout made it very clear that that was not sustainable for me. So I wanted to do something where I could utilize my skills. And I did a positive psychology course. The course lecturer recommended me becoming a coach. And he said, you know, social workers are the coaches of the therapeutic world. You've got all the skills, just transfer them. And so I did what I could. Coming from a social work background, it made a lot of sense for me to be a life coach. And that's what I did. Holistic life coaching, looking at your whole story. I trained as a somatic coach because I didn't feel like what I was seeing in the coaching world at that time went deep enough, bearing in mind my experience as a social worker.
And excuse my ignorance, but what does that mean, a somatic coach?
Coaching traditionally is very psychology based. So it's very much about you have got a goal. These are the steps you need to take in order to do that. But human beings, we live in our bodies first, and our bodies contain all of our stories, even the stuff we can't access anymore because it happened so long ago or because we're so sophisticated, we've suppressed it so it doesn't get in our way. Somatic coaching looks at the whole embodied experience. One of my focuses is the nervous system. So when people say, oh, I've had so much coaching, but I'm still not taking action, I'm not showing up the way I need to show up, I will then engage in practices and methods to help you tap into what's going on the inside. So maybe there's a story that is locked inside you and your nervous system is preventing you from taking action because there's a part of you that is really worried that what happened to you all those years ago will happen again if you behave in this way. Visibility is a huge one. If being visible meant you got into trouble when you were a child, it's going to be very difficult for you to be visible, especially to a whole load of strangers online. So there are lots of embodiment practices that involve movement, guided meditation, and different things to help you overcome or navigate your way through those challenges. So it's not just a case of, okay, this is my goal. These are the steps you need to take. It's like, okay, let's look at what's going on behind all of that and work with that rather than squash it down. So it's not just a case of feel the fear and do it anyway. It's tend to the fear and do it anyway. So I started off with that and it started to feel like social work. And it's not because of the people I was working with. I want to be very clear about that. It's my own stuff. A lot of us get into coaching work, therapy, mentoring, helping professions, because we experience something and we don't want people to experience that. So a lot of us are quite like high functioning codependent people who then transfer that into helping other people. And for me, whilst I can be boundaried with the person, I carry that with me. I'm on my lovely walk. I'm thinking, oh, I hope this person has done this. I hope they haven't. It felt very, very heavy. And then I had people coming to work with me and I said to my friend, Ray Dodd, I said, Ray, it's really weird. Like they're coming for this program, but it's like they want to do their own version of what I'm doing. And she said, well, don't make them wrong for it. And I was like, oh, I didn't even realize I was making them wrong for it. And number two, I had told myself that what I do is organic. It's just who I am. I can't teach people how to do this. And then I sat with it and I thought, well, if you stop judging them because you're judging yourself, and you actually look back at your steps, there is a framework, there is a method. Do that. And so I tested it out. And when I sent the initial email to my mailing list saying, this is what I'm thinking about, the responses, I was like, whoa, it was like something out of Bill and Ted's Adventure. I was like, oh my gosh, you fool. This is what people have wanted all along. And so that's how I came to supporting with people speaking. But Live360 was born out of my experience of burnout. I realized I was living on the edge of my life. I was only prepared to look at the 180 degrees that looked good on the outside. Anything that was uncomfortable, I was like a cat on a hot tin roof. Can't go anywhere near that. You know, burnout is really humbling. I had to move right into the center of my life. And in the center, I could take a full 360 degree view and I could see how the light made way for the dark and the dark made way for the light. And when I looked around me, there were so many women that were living on the periphery of their life, I decided to call the company Live360. However, there's always a however. My book was an opportunity for me to bring all of my ideas, thoughts, etc., experience into one place. I couldn't avoid it anymore. It wasn't like a patchwork quilt with the things scattered all over the place. And it radicalized me. It made me realize I couldn't continue to do the work I could do. I had to move into the work that I want to do, what I feel is a calling. And so it's taken me a damn long time, but I'm in the process of retiring Live 360. Live 360 will be no more.
Okay.
Last year, I registered the company, the Embodied Leadership Group. And just before coming on this call, I've talked about it on my mailing list, but there was a part of me that was scared to share it publicly because I was like, oh God, you're changing your mind. You're doing something new yet again. And I was like, yeah, because you're supposed to change when you're supposed to change. And the Embodied Leadership Group is all about nervous system first leadership. So one of the things I studied after my somatic coach training is polyvagal theory, which is developed by Stephen Porges, and it's the science of human safety and connection, human flourishing, basically. And it gave me a new lens on life, a new experience on life. And I think that 98.7% of the isms and schisms we experience as individuals and as a society, we would be able to dissolve a lot of that if we understood the science of human safety and connection and operated from that place. And bearing in mind my experience of work and how that impacted me and my nervous system, I don't want anybody to go through that unnecessarily. And I know that there are lots of organizations that don't know any better, so they're not able to do better. And I believe that I am in a position to be able to do that. And then for individuals, entrepreneurs like you and I, there are lots of us that started our business for whatever reason, and we've got lots of experience, lots of skills, expertise. We've worked with groups, we've worked with individuals, big groups, small groups. And now we're a bit like, oh, I feel like I've grown out of this, but I don't know what else to do. Well, with all that wonderful service-based entrepreneurial experience you've got, speaking makes sense. It's like graduating from, I don't know, secondary school to university. If you think about your growth as an entrepreneur, being in that position where you're sharing your wisdom with large groups of people and that also feeding into your business ecosystem, it makes a lot of sense. And I think that service-based entrepreneurs are in a really great position to be able to take wisdom into whether it's corporate environments, brands are corporates, festivals also are corporates, to share our knowledge on a wider scale. But it's a bit like being an Amazon delivery person. You've got your packages, they're wonderful. You take them to the event, you drop them off, and then you go home.
Yeah.
So it's a way of being able to share your expertise on a larger scale and have a big impact and do work that really lights you up, but then you don't have the ongoing weekly calls, etc. You're literally delivering it potently, getting paid a significant amount of money, and then you come home and send your invoice. So it's able to work really beautifully with your service-based business because it's a different way of operating.
And the book that you referenced is called Women Who Work Too Much. As somebody who almost definitely works too much, what is too much work in your eyes?
It's individual. It's whatever is too much for your own nervous system. So in my book, there is a chapter called Know Your Bandwidth, because a lot of us don't actually know our bandwidth. We don't know our strengths. We also don't know our limitations. And we are brought up to believe our limitations are a bad thing.
Yeah.
I remember there was a period of time where everybody was talking about being limitless. Our creativity, what we've got going on in our minds might be limitless, but this beautiful piece of technology we live within has limitations. And when we can respect those limitations, we're actually able to do more. So in that chapter about your bandwidth, I talk about there being a difference between your capacity and your capability. What your mind thinks you are capable is different to what you're physically able to do, what your capacity allows for. And when we understand what our capacity is, we can start to work within it so that when we have occasions where we need to go outside our capacity, we've got enough in the tank to be able to do that for a finite period of time, but then come back within our capacity.
It's really interesting because I will confess not to have read your book yet. Is it available as an audiobook?
Oh, yeah. It's on Spotify and Audible and all the other places.
Perfect. I'm much better with those. I like fiction on my Kindle and self-development business books on Audible. But that chapter about bandwidth, that is a term that I have not really used, I wouldn't say, until about 6 months ago. And recently, I've found myself saying quite often to maybe the people in my team, that's not something I've got bandwidth for. And I think it's because I'm feeling myself really stretched and we're looking at ways to reduce that urgently in the business so that I can keep functioning at the level that I want to function. But it's that term bandwidth, I think, is something that we as entrepreneurs in an ever rapidly increasing in terms of pace world are having to not come to terms with, that's the wrong expression maybe, but we're having to take note of.
Yes.
More than ever before, would you agree?
100%. So in my book, I talk about the Industrial Revolution. During the Industrial Revolution, we created machinery, technology as a species that made things faster. And one would have thought, great, we've got this technology that can make repetitive tasks faster. So now we can have time back. Didn't happen. We started to compare ourselves as a species to the speed of machines. And we've seen it with computers. We've seen it with the internet. We saw it again with social media. We're seeing it again with AI. So we're in a situation where rather than, okay, we've got AI that can take away a lot of the repetitive tasks we're doing, and we can reserve our brains for the creativity, for connection and all that kind of stuff. We're not doing that. We're just trying to churn out more and more work and constantly keep up with tech.
Yeah.
My thing is, get clear about what's important to you and your life. What do you need as an individual to be able to flourish? When you're clear on that, you can start setting meaningful goals for yourself. And I do not mean playing small. I talk all the time. My main goal in life as a 48 and a half year old woman is to be a well-rested woman. That doesn't mean I just want to lie on my laurels all day. We live in a cost of living crisis, post-pandemic, geopolitical stuff going on. Being a well-rested woman is expensive. It's not cheap. I'm not talking about playing small, but I've got friends, for example, who worked in very disordered ways getting to $1 million in revenue. They were in tatters afterwards. I don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
If it means that my aim then is 750, let it be so. I can live a beautiful, well-rested life with that. If it is going to be the million plus, and that's what it requires, let me put systems in place so that I have got a team that is working with and around me so that I can focus on the big, beautiful stuff that brings the money in, and they can take care of the bitty stuff that my ADHD just cannot stand.
Yeah.
So it's about getting really clear about what's important for you so that you can use technology to support you rather than trying to compete with it.
Oh, this honestly is such a welcome conversation, because this has been an area in which I have been kind of struggling and I've been grappling with it for the past 6 or 12 months. And I just agree wholeheartedly with this idea that just because we can produce more quicker doesn't mean we should. And what you're saying about being supported and focusing on the things that you are good at and letting go, this is what I'm doing in my business, like in real time. Just, you know, come off a call this morning to take our next steps, where it's about, what am I doing that's on my plate? And what do I need to stop being a control freak around?
Ooh.
So that I can stop being the bottleneck, so that everybody can get more job satisfaction, because they're going to be doing the things that they're great at as well.
I have got a recommendation for everybody. Dr. Benjamin Hardy does wonderful work around all of this stuff. And he has got, in collaboration with somebody else whose name I can't remember, two books. One is called The Science of Scaling, and then the other book is Time is a Tool. Those books are available as free audiobooks on Apple Podcasts. I'm an Apple user, so I'm not sure about Android, but you can buy the books. He also is published by Hay House. When I saw him speak, he talked about, he's got a book called 10X is Easier Than 2X. So what he explains is, you're better off going for a 10X goal rather than a 2X goal, because when you're going for that 10X, there's so many behaviors, systems, practices, habits you need to let go of to be able to focus on that 10X. You're just going to have to let go. And it helped me to understand fully that in order for me to achieve my goals, I don't need to do more, I need to do less. I need to do less of the piddly, tiddly, winky kind of stuff. That's a technical term. And do more of the big lever moving moves. So now if it's a tiddly wink, it goes elsewhere. If it's a lever mover, then I'm doing it. And guess what? There are lots of tiddly winks I've let slide. My business has still grown. So we sometimes get so obsessed over that busy work because we've got to be doing.
Oh my God, yeah.
And sometimes actually the best thing you can do is give yourself, give your brain that breathing space so that that real creativity can shine through.
100%. And this is my lived experience from the only time of year when I really do switch off fully for 2 full weeks, which is Christmas. And every year out of that period comes enormous creative brainwaves, ideas, and just things that are absolutely going to change the business and life. Yeah. So I need to create more space for those personally, and probably most of us do. I'm interested, Tamu, your book is called Women Who Work Too Much. Why women?
Because I'm obsessed with women. That's number one. Number two, because I'm a political person. I'll just say that. Lots of people have all sorts of things about it. And the reason I say that is because we are not just individuals floating around society. Our society is shaped by systems. And one of the biggest systems it is shaped by is patriarchy. James Brown sang, "This is a man's world," for a reason. And as women, there are lots of covert and overt rules, conditions, expectations about what it is to be a woman. So we find ourselves in situations where we are over-functioning all over the place because in a patriarchal system, women are not supported the way we need to be supported. Women work too much at home, in the office, in business, and we get far fewer of the results our main counterparts do. Whilst there are differences and things are changing, overwhelmingly, women are carrying the mental, emotional, invisible labour of running a household while simultaneously working full-time hours. There are just things that impact women differently. And in my book, I look at things from the lens of gender, racial identity, there's a bit of class in there, because all of these factors come together to create an environment where women are constantly over-functioning. And a lot of it is even invisible to us. So something that people say often when they read my book is, "Oh my goodness, I didn't even realize I was feeling that, but you've given me language to something I was feeling but couldn't articulate." Two of the reviews on Amazon, these just jumped out at me. We're like, "Oh, you're just blaming the system. This book is racist."
Wow.
No, it's not actually. It's uncomfortable because I talk about things like patriarchy, white supremacy, capitalism, but I'm not talking about it from a place of victim consciousness. I'm saying these are the things that are going on. They're invisible. They're in the air we breathe. But once you recognize it, you can see it and you can do something about it. And that's something about it. If you want to be going to wherever it is with a placard, fair play, you go and do that. But what it does do is it gives you agency. If I believe that I need to do all of the housework as well as keep on top of all of my work at home, I need to recognize that's not just a choice because I'm type A. That type A comes from somewhere. So I can now start to make a choice as to whether or not I stay on that train or I get off. I want, like some of the people in my world, they'd be like, "Yeah, we want to smash the patriarchy." I'm like, "You go ahead. For me, that feels like a waste of energy. I'd rather just get off the train and start heading in a new direction and encourage more and more people to explore new directions. And then we can settle on which is the most appropriate one for most of us to enjoy a good quality of life."
It's interesting that you say that, because as you've been talking, it's easy to feel helpless right now in the world. I feel. And so as you've been talking about this, I've been wondering, how do we make a difference? So if we women find ourselves working too much, it's become a habit that's really hard to break, we've been conditioned, we're used to it, we feel guilty for not doing it, what are some of the first steps we can take?
Slow down. It's so easy for guilt and shame, for example, to whoosh and take over when we're rushing around. When we slow down, we can ask, well, where is this guilt and shame coming from? Because invariably, it's come from our upbringing. It may not even have been our parents. It might have been in school. It might have been the people around us. So we can start to decide, am I going to continue this narrative, or am I going to create something new? Just because this is how it's always been done, it doesn't mean this is how it always needs to continue to be. So you can start to make powerful choices for yourself.
Yeah.
There was a woman I was working with yonks ago, and one of her big things was she couldn't focus on her business because her house was a mess. So we would set tasks. She didn't get a chance to do it. She had to do this, she had to do that, and then all the domestic stuff. And I said to her, you're always telling me about how supportive your husband is, yet you never give him a chance to show up and be supportive because you're running around and doing everything. And, oh, well, he doesn't do it properly. Do what? She said something about him hoovering. Now, according to this person, hoovering should be done by going through the door of the room and going to the furthest wall and then working your way back. But her husband would just go in with the hoover and start hoovering that way, and he didn't do it properly. And I said, did you hear what you just shared? And she's like, oh, yeah. Who cares if he hoovers from the left, the right, the front, the back, as long as it's done? And then it would be, oh, but when they take the kids swimming, they don't. So what if the children have jam sandwiches as a snack once a week? Like, these things don't matter. You're trying to control everything and you're not controlling anything. So slow down and work out what is important. I've had a number of occasions where people have been saying, I want to make 10K a month. I want to make 10K a month. And when we dig, they don't really want to make 10K a month. That's what everybody is talking about, and they think they should. There was one person who ended up leaving what she was doing as a business and going to work elsewhere 10 to 2. She just wanted to be able to pick up her kids from school and be able to buy them treats. I was like, we don't need 10K. Slow down. Live the life you want to live. Don't live the life you think society wants you to live. It's a scam.
Oh, refreshing. Thank you.
I just want to say, conversely, if you do want to have an empire and you want to be turning over millions and you want to have a team and you want to be a great employer and give people great annual leave and all of that kind of stuff, do it. We need more women out there doing what they want to do and role modeling and normalizing that for other women, because womanhood and martyrdom have been conflated. We're in a perpetual cycle of sacrificing ourselves. Let's not sacrifice anymore. Let's play to our strengths and operate in power so that when we meet our maker, we go with a smile on our faces because we've lived a life that belongs to us.
Love it. And speaking of power and powerful women, I happen to know that at Adventures in Marketing, you are going to be relating some of this back to Shira. Is that right?
Oh, you're very good. I love it. Yes.
So can you give us a little sneak peek for anyone listening who might be thinking about grabbing one of those last tickets into what you're going to be sharing at Adventures in Marketing that you know people are going to get excited about?
First things first, pause what you're listening to right now. Go to the link in the bio and buy the ticket.
Yeah.
This isn't a think about thing. This is a doing thing. Get on with it and I'll see you on the 5th of February, which is also my mum's birthday.
Oh,
very, very good day.
Brilliant.
To be, and Edinburgh's gorgeous. Why don't you want to be there? That's number one. Number two, fun facts. Got nothing to do with anything, but I've decided that this year is my year of fun and going to events is one of the ways I'm having fun.
Yes.
So come and join me in the year of fun and let's get this on and popping. Number three, Shira. Look, I'm so passionate, my voice is going all over the place. I have witnessed how influencer culture, content creation culture, has influenced how we utilize social media as business owners. And I've had so many conversations with people battling with the algorithm, getting really concerned about likes and engagement and all of this kind of stuff. And I'm just like, oh, social media is a tool. But you are using this tool to like hammer yourself. You're not using this tool to create. You're using this tool to evaluate yourself and your work really harshly. And I think in childhood memories, 90s hip hop and nature. And I sat down and I just thought, social media is like She-Ra's sword. I just remember the cartoon.
Yeah.
First of all, I thought about He-Man and I thought, no, we're not having He-Man, we're having She-Ra.
We're not having him.
We wield that sword and we use that sword as a channel to become the hero of the story. So in my keynote, I am going to be sharing how we can all utilize social media as the tool it is against whoever your common enemy is.
Okay.
Now, when I say that, people think, oh, I'm going to start talking about particular people. No, my enemy is toxic productivity and toxic productivity culture. I take a stand against that. So when I'm waving around my social media sword, I am focused on not rescuing people because I don't think people need saving, but I am focused on showing people there's another way. It's not just all childhood nostalgia. I've got some stats, I've got some figures, I've got some research that is going to show you how empowering it is to embody She-Ra and use social media as a tool to convey your expertise. It's going to help you get rid of all of the kind of insecurity and inadequacy we feel when social media isn't behaving the way we want it to. And I do not believe for one minute She-Ra would be looking at the algorithm as if it was something she needed to battle with. So we are going to be rising above the algorithm because we're not social media influencers. We're not trying to create parasocial relationships so that we can flog trainers, handbags, and holidays. We are actually inviting people into our world so they can have a browse and say, oh, yeah, that's for me. I'm going to click on Nikki's link because I want to work with her so I can build and create whatever it is I want to. You will walk away feeling like She-Ra is sitting on your shoulder, helping you to navigate through the social media landscape so that you can use it as a business tool.
Incredible. I love what you said at the end there as well. Let's not lose sight of the fact that we are not building social media to be famous on social media. We are building social media to sell via our business.
100%. 100%. And also, I've received messages for some people who are coming to Ventures in Marketing.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And I know, whether I know those people or I've looked at their work, we also use social media to share value. There are so many people who get a lot of value from what we share online. So let us be out there as leaders, not trying to be content creators. As far as I'm concerned, we should be utilizing social media as the invitation into our worlds that take place off social media. We're not going to be hanging around all day long. We're going to be using it strategically so that we can feel energized. And we have to stop making it the enemy. A lot of us are in the positions we are in because of social media.
Because, exactly. Yeah. 100%. And that applies to all marketing, in fact.
Yes.
Oh, Tammy, it's been so great to chat to you today on the podcast. Thank you so much for coming on. And I cannot wait to hear from you on stage at Adventures in Marketing next month.
I'm looking forward to it. And I'm also glad that I'm going to be there from the night before. I can't remember what time I'm leaving, but I want to catch as much as possible because there is so much value on there. You're not getting nonsense. You're getting stuff that you can apply whilst you're even in the room. And I'm going to be setting tasks I want you to do there and then so that you can see how social media can be a powerful tool for growth.
Brilliant. Love that it's going to be interactive as well.
Yes, yes, yes.
Amazing. All right. Thank you so much for joining Tammy and me on today's episode of From Overlooked to Fully Booked. I'll be back again next week. So I'll see you next Friday at 7 a.m. for that episode. But before then, do you want to hear even more about Adventures in Marketing and why we think you need to be in the room with us? Yes, of course you do. So head to adventuresinmarketing.uk, check out the full lineup, and bag yourself one of those final tickets today. And because you are my loyal podcast listeners, I'm going to give you a special code, JANSALE, all caps, which is going to take 15% off your ticket. But we do have At time of recording, less than 30 left. So definitely don't hang about. And we would love to see you there. Tamu, where is the best place for people to check you out online to make sure that they want to be in the room with us?
Oh my goodness. Come and find me on Instagram, tamu.thomas, or on LinkedIn, Tamu Thomas.
Amazing. So we hope to see you at Adventures in Marketing. But until then, take care and keep marketing.